Sikkhapadang samadiyami sura meraya majjhapamadatana veramani sikkhapadang samadiyami. Now we are chanting the padipa puja offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena ditena tamadang sina Tiloka dipang sambudang pujayami tamonudang ganda sambarayutena tupena hang sugang hina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bajana mutamang Vanna ganda guno petang etang kasuma santatin pujayami munindasa siri pada sarorohe pujemi buddhang kasumena nena Punnena matena cha hotu mokang Pupang milayati yata idang me Kayo tata yati vinasabhavang Adivase tunobante Paniyang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya patiganha tumutamang adivase tunobante pale parikapitang Anukampang upadaya patiganha tumutamang Adivase tunobante bojanang parikapetang anukampang upadaya patiganha tumutamang. Now we are chanting the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of pure, clear, cool water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our spiritual our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth. And why? Just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of all karma, so that we will diligently strive on with to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Then number 7, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, then let us pay respect to Pacha. Buddham Pujayami. Dhammam Pujayami. Sangham Pujayami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then we are off the light, so that you can have half an hour of meditation. Today is the 24th of July, 2018, Tuesday class. Okay, those who are going for the spiritual trip to Shangri-La, Tali, Lijiang, and also I think Yunnan area, your passport is back. So if you have not received yours, you can collect from my wife. She is at the back there. You can wait till after the session. Okay. Who are new, you may have your own meditation object, or they call methods and technique that you are familiar with. If you already know how to meditate, you can just meditate like normal. But always remember the four support for this type of awareness-based or mindfulness-based meditation. The four support, the first one is very important. Relax. Relax into every mind state that arise. Whatever that arise, just relax, relax and relax, and silence your mind. You have to understand the purpose of the meditation object and all those methods and techniques. They are just instruction to guide you, to train your mind. You are supposed to anchor your mind to the object of meditation, or whatever method and technique that they teach you, they will also ask you to anchor to something. It can be to your breathing, which is anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath, or silence your mind to be aware of your rising and falling of your abdomen. Or some of the Thai tradition, they ask you to be mindful of the word buddho, buddho, buddho. It's okay, up to you. You'll find it easy to develop the mindfulness, the calmness, the tranquility and the stillness, then you can use it. Or if you follow Mahayana tradition, you can also use your Mahayana chanting. Then if you follow Longpo Tian or the dynamic meditation where you need to move your hand, you can too. All these methods and techniques are just for you to anchor your mind. Then to train this mind so that the mindfulness can be stabilized. The mind that is not trained think a lot. It wanders off very fast. That's why most people teach you to anchor your mind to something. And that something is always the object of meditation that they recommend to you. It can be classified under methods and technique or chanting. Then it can also be a form of Kung An. Kung An is a Mahayana skillful means to awaken the mind. The Kung An can be in various form. The most common one is who is reciting the Buddha's name. Say Chinese for. Okay. Then the reason why you cannot meditate, or when you try to meditate, your mind is not peaceful, not calm. You are not able to enter the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness is because you lack the spiritual faculties. When your five spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya are not stable, the mental hindrance, the opposite five, will arise. Sensual desire and ill will, and sometimes sloth and torpor, means lethargic mind, sleepiness of mind. Then the fourth one is very common, restlessness of mind. Your mind think a lot, heedless, restless, because of the mental hindrance. Because when you live your daily life, you are heedless, you are not mindful, you are not able to develop the mindfulness in the midst of life, in your daily life. Then the last one is doubt. When you don't understand, doubt will arise. When doubt is there, you lack confidence, you lack saddha. That's why your mind is not calm, not composed. You cannot be in a meditative state. So the Buddha said, if you realize that the mental hindrance are there, you don't go and fight the hindrance or suppress the hindrance. Don't do anything. Just allow it to be. You just relax and silence your mind. Don't do anything. Whatever thought that arises, let it arise. Whatever mental hindrance that arises, let it arise. Maintain mindfulness. The four supports are relax, maintain mindfulness. So when you relax, your body and mind become quiet. Then when you silence everything, you develop sati. Without thought, you are already in sati, aware. You don't have to do anything to be aware. Then the third support is to maintain and sustain this silence within. Then the fourth support is trust. Trust your nature to meditate. Don't allow your thought to interfere. Do not use your thought to do things. When you use your thought, then you are doing thought-based meditation. You are not doing awareness-based meditation, because the thought becomes the meditator. Thought which is egoic cannot meditate, cannot realize a state of enlightenment which is beyond thought. So all this need to be understood. So what I normally teach is, if your mental hindrance are there, you still want to meditate, then you need a skillful means to temporarily decondition the heedless thinking born of the mental hindrance. So to do that, you can either use a mind sweeping method called mind loving kindness or metta. If you are new, you don't need to remember. We will give you one or two of these transcript books for you to read through, so that you can understand all those instructions that are given. Okay, mind sweeping method combining with metta is very simple. You just relax body and mind. Make sure you have a stable posture. Then silence everything. Then close your eye. Maintain attention at your forehead. Just feel. No more thinking. Feel. Relax. Whatever tension or tightness within your forehead, you just relax, relax and relax. Feel it soothingly relaxed. Then you move your attention down to your eye muscle. Feel again relax whatever tension, stress within, or tightness. You just relax into it. Relax, relax, and relax. Feel it soothingly. Relax. Then you move your attention now to your facial muscle. Do the same. Just relax, relax, and relax. After a tired day, normally you are quite tired. There will be stress and tension in your facial muscle or body. So you need to just silence everything and relax into it. Feel it soothingly. Relax. Then as you sweep your mind down, you continue to relax into every part of your facial muscle. Then to help you relax further, you can visualize yourself facing a mirror radiating a radiant smile. When you can smile, there is joy, there is happiness. Then your facial muscle naturally relaxes because of that joy. Then you can combine with loving kindness or metta. You can radiate metta the usual way. You can recite after me. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. You must feel the well-being and happiness within your entire body and mind. Each and every cell, feel it. May it too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May this body and mind of mine too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May its mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within your hearts. Feel it, feel. Don't think. Then you can repeat or continue your radiation of metta. This time you can radiate it to your loved ones. May all my loved ones be well and happy, well and happy. You can visualize them and radiate from your heart your loving kindness and metta to them. May their body and mind too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you can radiate this metta to all beings. May all beings within this vicinity, including all Dhamma friends or Kayamita, they are also meditating here, and all beings within the whole of SS2, Petaling Jaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, and our planet, Mother Earth, extending to all beings within our solar system, our galaxy, our Milky Way, and finally all beings within the entire universe. May they all too be well and happy, well and happy. May their body and mind too be free from all form of suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now, your mind should be more calm, more peaceful. Then you just relax and silence everything. Then you go back to your facial muscle, feel, relax. Then you sweep it down to your neck, feel, relax. Shoulder, feel, relax. Then your hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder, feel, relax. Then shift your mindfulness or awareness down to your heart area, your chest area. Feel, just feel. And silence your mind. If you can detect any vibration or your heartbeat, you just silence everything and just stay with it. You can be mindful of the vibration or heartbeat or any movement. You just silence everything and stay with it. Feel it. Be aware of it. No word, nothing. But if you are not used to anapanasati, you are not sensitive, your mindfulness is not strong or stable, you cannot detect anything, it's okay. You just feel like you feel your forehead. Just feel and relax into it. Any tension, any tightness or any stress within, you just relax, relax and relax. Feel it soothingly, relax. Then you sweep your mind down, your awareness down to your stomach. Silence everything and feel, relax. Then move it down to your abdomen, silence everything and feel, then relax. Then you move it down to your leg, feel, relax. Buttock, feel, relax. Then you can reverse the whole of this mind sweeping method backward. Feel the buttock, relax. Leg, feel, relax. Then your abdomen, feel, relax. Then you sweep up to your stomach, feel, relax. Then your chest area or your heart area, feel, relax. Your heart and chest area is the most important, where this is where the seat of consciousness is. Your life force, they arise and pass away here. This is the mind base. That's why you need to silence and maintain awareness there if you can. Then you sweep it out to your shoulder, feel, relax. Neck, feel, relax. Hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder, feel, relax. Then you sweep it out to your facial muscle, feel, relax. Then your eye muscle do the same, feel, relax. Feel it soothingly, relax. Then finally, your forehead, feel, relax. By now, you should be much more calmer. You should be in a state of relaxed, silent awareness, because you do not think anymore. Then this silence, which is your awareness or mindfulness, need to be stabilized. So you can use any method or technique or object of meditation that you are familiar with. If you don't have, you can try anapanasati as recommended by the Buddha. Mindfulness of the in and out breath. Just relax body and mind. Then like you feel your forehead, now you feel your breathing in front of your nostril feel. When the awareness is aware of your breathing, then like the instruction from the Buddha, breathing in, your awareness or mind is aware. Means the awareness and the breath move as one in perfect harmony and synchrony without thought. Then breathing out, the mind is aware. Just do this until the anapanasati is stabilized. Initially, if you are not familiar, you will not be able to do it because split second the mind will wander off. because the untrained mind is heedless. The untrained mind without the spiritual faculty think a lot, wanders off very fast. So what you need to do is be patient. Every time the mind wanders off, you bring your attention back to your breathing. Maintain awareness in front of your nostril, then silence everything and detect the breathing again. Then try your very best to allow the anapanasati to develop. When you are able to do it, then your mind will become different. The mind that is able to be mindful of the breathing without thought will be in a state of peace. Then it will experience what they call piti. Piti is a spiritual calmness, spiritual joy, or some call it a rapture, spiritual rapture. Like your mind become very blissful, very peaceful. Yeah. And there is a lot of joy. Then continue to relax into it and develop the stability of anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath. Then as you relax and the mindfulness develop, your mind will become more quiet, more peaceful, more refined. Then from piti, you will transform into sukhang. Sukhang is blissfulness of mind. You will experience a type of bliss that will arise. Then you continue to relax into it until finally the mind becomes very quiet, very still. Like the breathing all also slow down and like almost stop. So this is the refined mind. And when this happens, means the mind is in the state of pasati. Pasati is an enlightenment factor. Pasati is tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind, without movement. When this happens, it's a sign of good progress. Then you just completely let it be silent. Maintain the awareness, the tranquility, the stillness, or the pasati. This is a free mind, not in conditioned state, not in absorption, not in one-pointedness. It's free on its own, just relax, silent, aware. There is no focusing, no concentration, nothing. It's just aware. Okay, I will let you continue your meditation. Then when the half an hour is up, I will ring the bell. Yeah? Then you slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation so that we can continue with our invocation to the devas. Okay. Then slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed for as long as you can. You will need to use this trained mind state to live your daily life, to cultivate the daily mindfulness, which is the actual meditation. Okay, now turn to page 6. We will do the invocation to the devas. I will read the English. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakavalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammang munirajasa sunantu sakamokadang dhamma savanan kalo yang badanta dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta namo atasa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhasa namo atasa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhasa namo atasa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhasa iti peso bhagava arahang sammasambuddho vijja charana sampanno sugato kavido anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusana buddho bhagavati svakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehi pasiko opanaiko pachyatang veditabbo vinohiti supatipano bhagavato savakasango ujupatipano bhagavato savakasango nyaya patipano bhagavato savakasango samichi patipano bhagavato savakasango yadidang chattari purisa yukani atta purisa pugala esa bhagavato savakasango ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo anuttarang punyaketang lokasati sadu sadu. Buddhang Pujemi. Dhammang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay, you can be seated. Then we will have our second session. Second session is a continuation from where we stopped. We are using this reference book, The Buddha and His Teaching by Venerable Narada. We are at chapter 19, page 350. Chapter 19 is What is Karma? Then the Buddha says, Volition or Chetana is Karma. So we will continue from page 350. Tonight one is more interesting because the Buddha classified the various type of consciousness, karmic consciousness. The mundane consciousness, they got quite a number. But the akusala, or what they call unwholesome karma, means those karmic action or speech or thought process, the karmic arising is born of evil intention. That's why they call it the akusala karma. That one, if I'm not wrong, there are 11 of them. But the wholesome one, there are only about, I think, 8 or 9, I forgot already. Then after that, you got the 5 more within the form rhyme. Then another 4, the formless. Then there is this 8 very special Lukutara consciousness, or what they call the supramundane consciousness, the consciousness of enlightenment, where there is no karmic negativity, only wholesomeness of mind. But the author say they may not qualify as karma. Anyway, we will discuss it. I will pass the mic to PG, so we let PG lead. We will continue like last Tuesday, where we stop, we continue, so that you all can express what's your understanding of this law of karma, how has it impacted your life, and are you able to transform yourself based on this understanding of the law of karma? How has this nature's law helped you to understand life and to change the way you live your life for the better? Okay.
Good evening, Brother Teo, Mrs. Teo, and all Kalanamitas. Today we will continue with the subject, What is Karma? Page 350. In material mind conditions, all karmic activities. Karma does not necessarily mean past actions. It embraces both past and present deeds. Hence, in one sense, we are the result of what we were. We will be the result of what we are. I think that's what we discussed last week. In another sense, it shall be added, we are not totally the result of what we were. We will not absolutely be the result of what we are. The present is no doubt the offspring of the past, and is the parent of the future. But the present is not always a true index of either the past or the future. So complex is the working of karma. For instance, a criminal today may be a saint tomorrow. A good person yesterday may be a vicious one today. It is this doctrine of karma that the mother teaches her child when she says, "Be good and you will be happy, and we will love you. But if you are bad, you will be unhappy and we will not love you. Like attracts like. Good begets good. Evil begets evil. This is the law of karma. In short, karma is the law of cause and effect. In the ethical realm, or as some Westerners prefer to say, action influence. Karma and vipaka. Karma is action, and vipaka, the fruit or result, is reaction. Just as every object is accompanied by a shadow, even so, every volitional activity is inevitably accompanied by its due effect. Like potential seed is karma. Fruit arising from the tree is the vipaka, effect or result. As karma may be good or bad, so may vipaka, fruit, be good or bad. As karma is mental, so vipaka too is mental. It is experienced as happiness or bliss, unhappiness or misery, according to the nature of the karma seed. Anisamsa are the concomitant advantages, material conditions such as prosperity, health, and longevity. When vipaka's non-committal material conditions are disadvantages, they are known as adinava, evil consequences, and appear as poverty, ugliness, disease, short lifespan, and the like. By karma are meant the moral and immoral types of mundane consciousness, kusala, akusala, lokiya, citta.
So here is what I mentioned just now. Lokiya is mundane. Lokuttara is supramundane. So here is lokiya, citta. Citta is consciousness and is content. Then kusala is wholesome. Akusala is unwholesome, like the Malay word akusala. But kusala is wholesome. Okay, continue, Fiji.
And by vipaka, the resultant types of mundane consciousness, lokiya, vipaka, citta. According to Abhidharma, karma constitute the 12 types of immoral consciousness, 8 types of moral consciousness pertaining to the sentient realm, kamaya chara, 5 types of moral consciousness pertaining to the realm of form, rupa vachara, and 4 types of moral consciousness pertaining to the formless realm, arupa vachara. The 8 types of supramundane Lokuttara
consciousness
are not regarded as karma.
The author say it's not regarded, but it's still karma actually.
Because they tend to eradicate the roots of karma. In them, the predominant factor is wisdom, panya, while in the mundane, it is volition, chatena. The 9 types of moral consciousness pertaining to the 9 types of moral consciousness pertaining to the realm of form and the formless realms are the 5 rupa vachara and the 4 arupa vachara jhanas, ecstasies, which are purely mental. Words and deeds are caused by the first 20 types of mundane consciousness. Verbal actions are done by the mind by means of speech. Bodily action are done by the mind through the instrument of the body. Purely mental actions have no other instruments than the mind. These 29 types of consciousness are called karma because they have the power to produce their due effects quite automatically, independent of any external agency. These types of consciousness, which one experiences as inevitable consequences of one's moral and immoral thoughts, are called resultant consciousness pertaining to the sentient realm. The five types of resultant consciousness pertaining to the realm of form, and the four types of resultant consciousness pertaining to the formless realms are called vipaka, or fruit of fruit or fruition of karma. As we sow, so we reap, somewhere and sometime, in this life or in the future birth. What we reap today is what we have sown earlier, in the present or in the past.
Okay, I will just brief you a little bit more. Just now, I think I told you there are 11, the akusala karma. Actually, it's 12. I make a mistake. So the first 12 is akusala karma, or what they call the unwholesome state of karma. These are called akusala citta. Then the other 8, this is according to Abhidhamma. Abhidhamma is the higher teaching. So karma constitutes the 12 types of immoral consciousness, or akusala citta. Akusala is immoral. Citta is consciousness and is content, actually. But here they just take it to mean that. Then there are 8 types of moral consciousness pertaining to the sensual realm of karma vachara, means karma loka. The 3 world, we have the sensual realm, we have the form realm, then we have the formless realm. So within the sensual realm, we got 20, total 20, 12 and 8, of karmic consciousness. Then 5 more moral consciousness pertaining to the form realm. Then another 4 more pertaining to the formless realm. So this makes a total of 29. Then we got 8 types of supramundane consciousness. They call it the Lokottara, or supramundane consciousness. Here it come about because there are 8 pairs. 4 pairs of enlightened being. You understand? 4 pairs. So 4 times 2 is 8. So each and every of these enlightened being, the path and friction, they will arise one type of supramundane consciousness. That's why there are 8 in total. So total 29 plus 8 is 37. So this is their classification under what they call Abhidhamma, the higher teaching. Then the formless realm and the form realm, they are all moral consciousness, because they are mainly the ecstasy state of mind, or the jhanic experience that they experience when they are up there. Even though the author tried to define the supramundane consciousness as non-karmic. Non-karmic in the sense, I think, he means there is no negative fruition of karma. That's why he called it non-karmic. But karma is volition. So here the mental intention is born of wisdom. So there is still volition. But because of the wisdom factor, is incapable of negativity. That's why supramundane consciousness are also part of karma, but there is no resultant, because there is no negative resultant, because it doesn't have any evil roots. It is born of wisdom. So there is, they don't even have positive craving and all those things. It's always for the good of the many, they accord and flow with condition. There is no self involved. So this supramundane consciousness are consciousness of enlightened being. So this part you need to make a note. Okay, yeah, you can go on, huh, PG.
The Samyutta Nikaya states, according to the seed that sown, so is the fruit you reap therefrom. Doer of good will gather good, doer of evil, evil reaps. Sown is the seed, and planted well, thou shalt enjoy the fruit thereof. Karma is a law in itself that operates in its own field without the intervention of any external independent ruling agency. Inherent in karma is the potentiality of producing its due effect. The cause produces the effect explains the cause. The seed produces the fruit explains the seed. Such is their relationship. Even so are karma and its effect. The effect already blooms in the cause. Happiness and misery, which are the common lot of humanity, are the inevitable effects of causes. From a Buddhist standpoint, they are not rewards and punishments assigned by a supernatural, omniscient ruling power of a soul that has done good or evil. This is who attempt to explain everything by this one temporal life and an eternal future life, ignoring a past, may believe in a post-mortem justice and may regard present happiness and misery as blessings and curses conferred on this creation by an omnipotent divine ruler who sits in heaven above controlling the destinies of the human race. Buddhism that emphatically denies an arbitrarily created immortal soul believes in natural law and justice which cannot be suspended by either an almighty God or an all-compassionate Buddha. According to this natural law, acts bring about their own rewards and punishment to the individual doer, whether human justice finds him or not. Some there are who cavil thus. So, you Buddhists to administer the opium of karmic doctrine to the poor, saying, you are born poor this life on account of your past evil karma. He is born rich on account of his past good karma. So be satisfied with your humble lot, but do good to be rich in your next life. You are being oppressed now because of your past evil karma. That is your destiny. Be humble and bear your suffering patiently. Do good now. You will be certain of a better and happier life after death. The Buddhist doctrine of karma does not expound such fatalistic views, nor does it vindicate a past mortem justice. The all-merciful Buddha, who has no ulterior selfish motives, did not teach this law of karma to protect the rich and comfort the poor by promising illusionary happiness in an afterlife. According to the Buddhist doctrine of karma, one is not always compelled by an iron necessity, for karma is neither fate or predestination imposed upon us by some mysterious unknown power to which we must helplessly submit ourselves. It is one's own doing, reacting on oneself, and so one has the power to divert the course of karma to some extent. How far one diverts it depends on oneself. You want to explain anything else, Brother?
You all can discuss it if you want to. So based on what has been shared by the author, which PG has already read out, the various type of karmic consciousness, I think total 29 plus 8, the supramundane consciousness is 8, whereas the Lokiya or worldly consciousness, mundane consciousness, there are total of 29. Then the author also bring out some topic for discussion, because a lot of people don't quite understand how the working of the law of karma. So as Buddhists, we should develop some form of understanding. So based on what has been discussed and written, do you have any question? Or do you have your own understanding? We can discuss this.
Brother, hey, I think let me finish this a little bit more. I think there will be more to discuss.
Okay.
The cause of karma, ignorance, avijja, or not knowing things as they truly are, is the main cause of karma. Dependent on ignorance arise karmic activities, avijja paccha sankhara, states the Buddha in the Paticca Samuppada, dependent origination. Associated with ignorance is early craving, tanha, the other root of karma. Evil actions are conditioned by these two causes. All good deeds of a worldling, puttijana, though associated with the three wholesome roots of generosity, alova, goodwill, adosa, and knowledge, amoha, are nevertheless regarded as karma, because the two roots of ignorance and craving are dormant in him. The moral types of supramundane path of consciousness, margacitta, are not regarded as karma because they tend to eradicate the two root causes. The doer of karma. Who is the doer of karma? Who reaps the fruit of karma? Is it a sort of accretion about a soul? In answering these subtle questions, Venerable Buddha Gosa writes in the Visuddhimagga, no doer is there who does the deed, nor is there one who feels the fruit. Constituent parts alone roll on. This indeed is the right discernment.
Yeah, this particular stanza is a very good discussion topic. It can actually put for a lot of understanding when you can really develop the understanding from it. So here, the question is, who is the doer of karma? Is there a person who commits karma? Then who reaps the fruit of karma? Have you ever considered those cases? You always say, "Ayo, I have bad karma, my karma." But then here Buddha Gosa answered differently. He said, no doer is there who does the deed, nor is there one who feels the fruit. Constituent parts alone rolls on. Means he's trying to tell you these are dependent originating condition arising phenomena. Then this indeed is the right discernment or the right way to look at it. Okay, we put this for discussion. The rest we can wait later to go through. How much more? Three more pages. Okay, maybe you finish it first.
According to Buddhism, there are two realities, apparent and ultimate. Apparent reality is ordinary, conventional truth, samuttisaccha. Ultimate reality is abstract truth, paramattasaccha. For instance, the table we see is apparent reality. In an ultimate sense, the so-called table consists of forms and qualities. For ordinary purpose, a scientist would use the term water, but in a laboratory he would say H2O. In the same way, for conventional purposes, such terms as man, woman, being, self, and so forth are used. The so-called fleeting forms consist of physical phenomena which are constantly changing, not remaining for two consecutive moments the same. Buddhists, therefore, do not believe in an unchanging entity, in an actor apart from action, in a perceiver apart from perception, in a conscious subject behind consciousness. Who then is the doer of karma? Who experiences the effect? Volition or will, chetana, is itself the doer. Feeling, vedana, is itself the reaper of the fruits of action. Apart from these pure mental states, Sudadharma, there is none to sow and none to reap. Just so, says the Venerable Buddhaghosa, in the case of these elements of matter that goes under the name of fruit, as soon as at any point the fruit springs up, it
tree,
is then...
Name of tree.
Let me go back. In the case of these elements of matter that goes under the name of tree, as soon as there is at any point the fruit springs up, it is then said the tree bears fruit, or thus the fruit has fruitified.
The tree.
Why did I always say fruit? The tree has fruitified. So also in the case of aggregates, khandhas, which goes under the name of deva or man, when a fruitation of happiness or misery springs up at any point, then it is said that deva or man is happy or miserable. In this respect, Buddhists agree with Professor William James when, unlike Dukkati, he asserts
I heard my philosophy teacher told me
thoughts themselves are the thinkers. Thought themselves are the thinkers.
Here, they describe it wrongly. Krishnamurti described it better. Can you recall what did Krishnamurti say? Krishnamurti always asks you, is there a thinker behind the thought? Remember? So is there a thinker behind the thought? By logic, you will definitely say, yes, there is a thinker. Right? Without a thinker, how does the thought arise? That's why you always say, I think. But did you really check through meditation? Who think? What think? And what is thought? You cannot recall this. Because most of you, I think, didn't really go and meditate. If you really meditate and find out what thought is, then you will be able to answer this very clearly. Not based on what you assume from the teaching. Because the Buddha say, anatta, non-self. That's why you say there is no thinker. If you base on that, then you cannot develop the true understanding or wisdom, because this is knowledge that you believe in. But if you really see it in the meditation, then you will have a different understanding. Do you know how you create thought or not? How you create thought? Most of you are born how many years? I think average 40 years. Since birth until now, you have been creating non-stop thinking and thought. And yet you don't know how you create thought. Who wants to try? This part you have to understand. What is thought? How does thought come about? Of course, thought is response from memory, which is very good. But how do you know that? Because you only by logic, isn't it? Without memory, I cannot think, isn't it? Like a kid, newly born. No memory, they got no thought, isn't it? But when you really silence your mind and in the meditative state, you will be able to have this ability to be aware of thoughts. And this thought comes from memory. Yeah. That's why thought is responding to memory, the thought come about. And there is another way where human beings create the conscious thought during the daily life. Yeah. Of course, it also involves memory. But that one is through your perception. When you perceive something through your other senses, like your ear, your eye, your nose, your tactile, and your tongue, taste consciousness. Okay, now I have to use the whiteboard to explain to you. So thought equals response. Respond from memory. Respond from memory. So without memory, there is no thought. Yeah? So thought is basically respond from memory or respond of memory. This is at the brain level. The brain create thought through respond to memory or respond from memory. But as a human being, we have our senses, our five physical senses. Senses. This one you know, yeah. What are your senses? Yeah? Your eye? Your? What else? Ear? Nose? Tongue and? Tongue and T-O-U-G-U-E and bodily tactile. So these senses are very important. When your mind makes contact, what happens? It will arise a consciousness. It will make you conscious. Do you understand? Yeah. So the consciousness, like the Buddha say, in the seeing is only the seeing consciousness. It's just like the physics experiment, you remember? Physics experiment. So this is the battery, the power point. Positive and negative. Then this is like your organ. This is the light bulb. The light bulb is like your organ. Let's say I put in circle thing. Then when you switch it on upon contact, this light bulb will light up. The lighting up of the light bulb is like you become conscious. You understand? Conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you tactile feel and think. Yeah. This process, according to the Buddha, is like the physics experiment. It occurs naturally. You don't need a god or a creator to make you conscious of seeing. You don't need a soul inside there that is responsible for your consciousness and all those things. The Buddha said, all these are nature's law. Upon contact, it lights up by itself, naturally. Yeah. So that's why in the seeing, when this lighting up is the eye, the seeing consciousness, when it arrives, like the light bulb, is natural. Understand? Nature's law. That's why when this consciousness arises, delusion comes in. Because through your conditioning, your brain, your wrong view, you go and associate with your seeing. And how did you associate with your seeing? You straight away say, I see. Understand? That's why the egoic mind come in, the consciousness come in. When you input the content through self-delusion, yeah, it will arise. So what happened is, there are two types of mind. What are they? Huh? Yeah, you have your true mind and your mundane mind or thinking mind, condition arising mind. So this one, based on the physics experiment, the Buddha said, upon contact, the seeing conscious arise, this one is dependent originating. Understand? This one is the mundane mind. You understand? Yeah. So what happened is, your true mind, your true mind is basically what? Spacious awareness. Understand? Because this one is just awareness before the knowing. You understand? That's why it's just spacious awareness without a center. That is your true mind. Before the perception, before the knowing, before the dependent originating mind or mundane mind arise. The second one is your mundane mind. Mundane or dependent originating mind. Originating mind. So what happened is, from the spacious awareness, suddenly, let's say, through your seeing consciousness, you perceive something, maybe the Buddha image, yeah? Or you perceive my voice, or you perceive this microphone that I'm holding, or you perceive me speaking the Dhamma or sharing the Dhamma with you. What happened to your consciousness? Yeah? From the spacious awareness, you shrink to this image, is it, that you are trying to perceive, is it? Means you input the content. So from a spacious awareness, you went into a small space, a thought space. Thought space. Which is small. That's why Krishnamurti say thought is limited. Because from spacious awareness, it shrinks into a small space, thought space. Then you input the content. The conditioned mind, or deluded mind, conditioned mind, yeah, through its views and opinion, yeah, inputs the content. And this content, based on your views and opinion, it becomes kusala or akusala, wholesome or unwholesome. Understand? When your mental intention is based on wrong view, with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then this one become akusala citta, means negative karmic consciousness. But when you have right view, you don't have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then this content become kusala or wholesome citta, kusala citta. Then it become wholesome karmic consciousness. You understand? That's why when you shrink the spacious awareness, then this one become a mundane mind. Then you input the content, this become a thought. That's how thought arise. Understand? That's how you create thought since birth until now. When you are a baby, newborn, you got no thought. You see things as they are. That's why you are very curious, very cute, very naive. Everything excites you. That day I remember my wife received a WhatsApp. They go and do all those things in front of the baby, the kid. She was laughing like anything. You know. So I was thinking, why was she laughing? You know? Then she showed me, you know, really? You go and try to stimulate the kid's hearing, the baby. But they haven't heard this before. They got no knowledge of what this thing is. There is no word, no concept, nothing. Wow, I tell you, you go and check with her. The baby just very cute. You can see them responding naturally. Because today, to them, it's so cute. Then they flash the light and all those things. Then they like ring something. But it goes through their hearing consciousness and their seeing consciousness, they can see. But they got no words up there, understand? No memory. So they got very excited. So all this is how the human form of mind functions. This one you have to understand. This one I have explained many times, but this time I explain it a bit clearer. At the retreat, I used to explain this. So from the spacious awareness, you shrink because you shrink your consciousness to the thing you perceive. Then through memory, the perception comes in. Actually, within the pure perception, before the egoic mind comes in, before the mental intention comes in, the content of consciousness is not there. I finished this off. It's just like the Buddha said, in the seeing, it's only the seeing consciousness. Nothing has gone in yet. Nobody has actually do anything yet. So that consciousness itself is just the pure awareness, the pure consciousness. And now you can pass the mic to Jui. For those sitting here can see or not.
Radio, yeah. You just mentioned that from spacious awareness,
you shrink
into that.
Through your perception, shrink. Because the object that you are interested in, understand? When you perceive something, means your mind is focused there.
Am I having a mental difference in perception, or it's the same thing? You concentrate.
Not concentrate. You direct your mind there.
Yeah, you direct.
Now you turn around. You perceive that lady in pink. You call pink or what? Orange. What happened to your consciousness?
I divert it and I look at her and I
concentrate. No, you have to perceive her, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
So your consciousness shrink there, isn't it?
I don't know. That's why I'm trying to understand.
When you don't perceive, what happened to your consciousness? When you don't perceive, you are the silent mind, isn't it? And what is the silent mind? Just aware, isn't it? That is spacious awareness. But the moment you try to know something, that's why I say awareness. Sati is awareness before the knowing, before the perception. The moment you perceive, Huineng say you dwell, understand not? You dwell there. That's why your mind dwells everywhere throughout the day. You realize or not? Whatever it thinks, it dwells.
Yeah. When I think of spaciousness,
it's
awareness
okay.
And spaciousness, that means your awareness of person
you are using you are using thought. You are using thought. Because you have this concept of a person aware, like in the what they call the four foundation of mindfulness, Satipatthana workshop. I heard the recording, the SBS. Somebody asked the teacher or the monk in charge, who is aware? Aware of what? You are trying to say, when the spacious awareness means you are using thought to rationalize what that thing is. No, the moment the word fan, you gone already. You are not aware already. That's why I say you are using thought. Whatever word that come out is no longer awareness. You can explain that spacious awareness before the knowing. You know what is before the knowing? That's why just now you use your hand, I can be aware of here, aware of that. That is not awareness already. There is a person trying to be aware of here, aware of there, aware of this. Understand or not? The awareness is before the knowing. It's just silent, stillness, awareness, the silent mind. You are either aware or you are lost in thought. Can you follow that? That's why I say you are using thought, because you use a measurement, aware from here to here, aware of there. That is the thought coming out already. But if you just aware, it's a silent mind. Just aware. No word. You understand? Yeah. But to live life, you have to arise thought. You have to use thought. Otherwise, you cannot communicate with people. Understand? Yeah. So you can use words, but that word is not the thing. Because that thing is without words. There is the awareness before the thought, before the dependent originating mind. It's just like, how can you be aware of silence? Silence is without sense data, understand? Not? Without vibration. No need the eardrum to pick it up, where there is no data to imprint the hearing eardrum. And yet, there is a nature inside you, the essence of mind, that can be aware of silence. No sound. That one is the unconditioned. That one is your true mind. But the moment you label it silent, that word come out. Understand? Huh? You understand? Huh? Can, in the meditative state without the word. Can, just like how I explained to you. That's why I say you must be able to tell me you are not using word when you experience that thing. I already told you awareness, sati is awareness before the knowing. How can you know? The moment you know, you are gone. The awareness is aware of silence is before the knowing. That's why I say the word silent, when I say aware of silence, that word is not that thing. Understand? Means the true mind, without perception, without words, that so-called awareness is your word. Understand? But the word is not the thing. You have to do it in the meditation. When you are completely silent without thought, you will understand what I say. And the awareness is before the knowing. It is that nature inside that, the essence of mind, your true mind. That's why Huineng say, you have to realize that in the first stage. The first stage is what? to realize no thought. Remember? How do you realize no thought? When you are completely without thought, the true mind arises. That's how you can realize the true mind. That is the first stage to meditate. Otherwise, you cannot be with the silent mind. You cannot be aware. That's why I used to tell you all the sati that they do is thought-based. Mostly. Almost 100%. Yeah, they know. They use words. And they use thought a lot. Because they seldom have a situation where they can be complete silent. Space between thought. They got no space. Thought continuously dependent originating, heedlessly, continuously proliferating. Yeah. You try to silence your mind not to think, you go and try. If you don't have the sati developed, you cannot. But when you have the sati developed, it's just very natural. The moment you relax, silent is silent really. That's why your mind listens to you. You want it to go into stillness, you will go into stillness. It does not think. You want it to arise, you will arise. You want it to perceive, you will perceive. It can be with the moment, without thought, fully aware. Or it will be describing the thing, lost in thought. Preoccupied with what you are thinking, what your brain is telling you, what your consciousness is trying to describe to you. So all this, you have to meditate, silence your mind to understand. Otherwise, it will remain as knowledge. That's why I say the real meditation is not what you think. You really have to silence completely. And you have to stabilize that paucity, that tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind. And that mind, the true mind, is so near the conscious mind, the dependent originating mind, the mundane mind. Very fast it come out. Split second it come out already. That's why mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. That's the reason why the Buddha mentioned very clearly, your mind, your thinking mind, is the forerunner of all things. And that one very fast. Dependent originating, condition arising. Okay? Yeah. So with this, I think we can open for discussion. So what do you think now? Yeah? Is there a thinker behind the thought? Yeah? After explain like that, still cannot understand. Is there a thinker or not? You must silence your mind and investigate. Otherwise, every time you try to recall through memory, what did Brother Teo say? But when you reflect, contemplate, and go in and meditate, then when you realize that understanding is always with you, never disappear from you. We already defined that. Now I teach you based on normal contemplative wisdom. Thought is respond to memory, okay? Can follow on that? Then you silence your mind and find out. Is this statement true? If thought is respond to memory, means it is without a person inside there, understand or not? Thought just arise. Through what? Through memory. If it just arises through memory, it's dependent originating, it's following nature's law. Understand? Then how can there be a thinker behind? That's why Krishnamurti said the thought thing itself. Through what? To respond from memory. Or respond to memory. But if you don't have a memory to tell you what this thing is, you cannot perceive it. You understand? How do you know it's a Buddha? How can you perceive it? How can you label it? Through memory, isn't it? That's why when thought arises through memory, is because you accumulate. When you accumulate into your brain, what happens is you don't have the wisdom, the understanding. you cling on to it, hold on to it, because you have unfinished business over it. Especially your memory. What are the things you store in your brain, your memory? Your good and bad experience in life. True or not? Yeah? And which is the one that you carry more? Huh? Mostly it's your problem, isn't it? That's why you hold on to it. My job, my career, my relationship with my husband, my wife, my children, my spouse, my neighbor. All those things that affect you, understand or not? Or financial problem, career problem, your emotional problem, understand? A lot of things that can cause you suffering and misery. The so-called problems of life, first noble truth reality, like sickness. You worry about this body getting old, getting sick, and one day die. You're scared of suffering. You're scared of the medical bill. Understand? How am I to pay my medical bill? If I am sick, landed in the hospital, I cannot work. Where am I going to get the income? You go and project your thought. Understand? And who project? The form and mind that worry project. You understand? That's why I said no amount of worry can solve your problem. Why go and worry? Because you are deluded. You think it's a problem. You don't have wisdom. You cannot see things as they are. You think only you get sick. This whole world only you suffer. Everybody have to face the same reality like you, like the Buddha said. We have to confront old age, sickness and death. Birth, old age, sickness and death. We have to confront separation from our loved ones. Separation from our possession, whatever we think we own, we hold. And separation can come in many ways. Through death of a loved one. Through relationship breakdown. Divorce. Then nature's disaster. Sometimes snatch thief also, kidnapping, all those things can cause death, can cause separation. Then sometimes war, tsunami, earthquake, building collapse, riots. So all these are the condition for separation. Then economic crisis, when you make a wrong decision, your whole career, your whole saving, wealth, investment, all gone. Then sometimes people rob you. Then sometimes looted by people. Fire. All these are the various conditions. And everybody who live life long enough have to experience all this, have to confront all this. It's a matter of sooner or later. And your karmic conditioning. If your karma is good, you take care, then you have less of this. Then you have wisdom, you got none of this. But without wisdom, you accumulate, you worry, you hold, you cling to memory. That's why the thing that hurt you are your psychological memory. Scars of memory. You know what is scars of memory? Your phobia, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your misery, your suffering. All this you hold on, especially your phobia. Yeah. When you have been like certain people go through life, their karma not so good. They have been subject to child abuse, sexual harassment, rape and all those things. And then snatch thief, rob and all those things. And when you have to confront any of these, I tell you, it can be very traumatic, understand not? Like those kena snatched one, I was told by one of the Kayanamita, I think our New Zealand good friend, Sue. You know what she say or not? But after he kena the snatched deer, he say, even after 1 year, when I hear motorbike sound, I panic, straight away. because that memory come back. Understand? Yeah, she was quite badly hurt that time. He said the snatch thief just pulled her hand back and she fell and wounded quite badly. So all this is what memory is all about. Your phobia, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your scars of memory, your unhappy moments. Even a lot of university graduates, after you come out to work, actually you pass your degree already. Some even score first class honors. But you every time dream that you haven't passed your exam. You realize not? You got phobia inside the dream. Then when you wake up, you ask yourself, how come I still got this type of fear? You know why? That time you got exam fear. Understand not? You fear that you fail your exam. And a lot of graduate, almost 90% all got this type of problem. Even when the early years before I know the number, I also have this type of dream. Then when I understood all this, I don't have this type of dream anymore. No more. But this is attachment, delusion, clinging, grasping, holding. Holding on to what? Your fear. Your phobia, your intense fear. You accumulate them in your subconscious, your memory, without you knowing. So when you sleep, the subconscious release out like dream state. Then these are the things that you worry and so on. That's why the mind or the brain need to find order. Krishnamurti said, you live a life of disorder in the daily life. You don't understand. You don't have mindfulness. You don't have awareness. You cannot understand all this. That's why you get trapped. That's why sometimes for no reason that thought keep on coming. Especially when you have problem. Either financial problem, health problem, or relationship problem, or career problem, or police case problem. I tell you, throughout the day you cannot sleep. You always think of the same thing. Not until that so-called problem is resolved, you will never have a good sleep, I tell you. Unless you have the Dhamma. So what I am trying to drive at is, the Buddha's teaching is very beautiful. Whatever that happened in life, he said, never perceive it in negativity or label it as a problem. Why? The Buddha said, thing is just the way it is. The reality is. Like law of karma. Condition like that, things will be like that. It cannot be otherwise. We are all subject to nature's law. So if I can see things as it is, if I can accept the reality of the moment, then I will not perceive it with negativity and fear. Understand? I will not say it's a problem. I will say, this is the first noble truth reality. Reality of life and existence. Everybody goes through. Everybody needs to confront sickness or whatever. Let's say, very traumatic disease, cancer, all those things. So what? The Buddha said you got two choices. Worry about it, become miserable. Accept it, then move. And ask yourself, what are my options? How can I resolve this amicably? How can I recover from all this? Then the second approach is with wisdom, with understanding. When I accept, I don't project my thought. I don't worry, I don't have fear. I am at peace, I am calm, I have clarity of mind. I can silence my mind, reflect, contemplate, meditate, and find out what actually happened. Let's say, doctor diagnosed, maybe through the CT scan or some result, blood test or what, then they say, chances are you may have cancer. Then what happened? They asked for a biopsy to confirm it. I tell you, a lot of people, during that time when they take your sample, you have to wait for the result. Normally it's 1 week. I tell you, there was one Vipassana Center, our PJ, Vipassana Center president. He happened to be one of the Kayamita that used to attend my class. When I visited him at the hospital, you know what he told me? You see, but all your Dhamma fly out of the window. That moment, the whole face in Bhasa, no, Puchata, you see. You know what is Puchata? Turn what? Turn what? Puchata. Pale. I think the English word not so forceful. The Malay word very forceful. Puchat, no. It's like you are in a state of shock. Understand, no? And you really, he said that intense fear, he cannot sleep, no, for that whole week. He said it was worse than hell, worse than death. At least you die, all gone. He go and project his thought and develop the fear, the unnecessary fear, no? And that was tremendous suffering. And luckily, after 1 week, the result come out negative. Then he can joke with us. You just imagine, if the result has been positive, what will happen to him? That's why without this teaching, without this Dhamma, you cannot handle life. When you are faced with problem, you cannot handle, I tell you. But when you have wisdom, all this is just normal life reality. So on. Not only I confront, everybody has to face it. If you have that karmic conditioning, it will come. When it comes, you know how to accept that reality. Like the Buddha always say, there are two ways to deal with things or situation. One is panic, worry, and become miserable. Won't solve your problem. You get yourself more entangled and more miserable. The second way is the wisdom way. Reflect, contemplate, and accept this reality. According to the teaching, whatever that happened, there are causes and conditions behind. And most of the causes and conditions is karma. Like the Buddha said, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So if you know that karma is the cause, you have to develop the wisdom to do what you have to do. And the solution is very simple. The Buddha already taught us. He said, you need to ask for forgiveness and repent. Do it. Sincerely do it in front of the Triple Gem, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. Then vow not to repeat all this karmic negativity. Then from this moment onward, vow to follow the advice of the Buddha, to avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind, to take care of karma. Then after that, you will develop a lot of wholesomeness, merits, understanding, wisdom. Then keep your precept. Listen to Dhamma, straighten your view. Pay respect to Triple Gem, to the worthy one. Then make offering. Develop more and more of the generosity. So all these are meritorious action. Then help out, help people who are in need, provide service to the community, to the sasana. Then learn to rejoice with the wholesomeness of things, good things. Then learn to share merit, transfer merit like what we did. Then you will be able to perform all the 10 meritorious actions. And this will give you the virtue that you need to turn around your problem. Then you invoke power of merit, the third one. By the power of all this merits, wholesomeness that I have cultivated since knowing this teaching, may it arise a causes and condition for me to recover from whatever disease or life situation, so that you can turn around, you can gain back your life to live the happy life again, the good life again. If you don't do this, nothing can help you, I tell you. Then you have to apply Noble Eightfold Path. Right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood. Then the four right effort to constantly purify your thought. Then train your mind to have mindfulness. Then develop sati and samadhi to see things as they are, to arise the wisdom, the understanding. Then your mind is completely different. Then you don't worry about life anymore. You will understand life clearly. You just live. Then you can accept the reality of whatever that arises. There is no more fear. You just have to attend to things. Then when you have noble eightfold path, your mind state are beautiful. You have loving kindness. You have gentleness, pleasantness. You have virtue, generosity, sincerity, contentment, kindness, gentleness. All these are your virtue. Yeah. Then with this mind state, there is positive energy within you. Your love, your compassion, your wisdom, your understanding, your good mind state. When you know how to meditate, your inner peace, your inner calmness, your inner stillness, all this will make you strong, give rise to positive mind state energy, as opposed to what? Your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow. All these are negative tendencies, negative mind state that will cause your immune system to go down. That's how people get cancer. That's how people cannot recover from their sickness. That's why their mind state become very negative. A lot of anger, a lot of hatred, and lead to depression. Because the thought keep on coming, cocoon of thought. They have been trapped inside that thinking, non-stop thinking. And how did that thinking come about? Because of the constant fear, the worry, the anxiety. But you perceive it with negativity. You say this is your problem. And you want to push away your problem. Because you don't know how to solve your problem. It's just like the example that I used to give. Let's say this cup is burning you, tormenting you. Let's say very hot. What happens if you hold on to this cup? It will burn you. It will torment you. So is that the right way to do things? If you know it burn you and torment you, you should put it down. Means don't hold, don't attach, don't cling. Like your thought. Don't believe the wrong thought. Put it down and ask yourself, what actually happened? This is life, subject to nature's law, the five panchaniyama. Not only my form and mind is subject to it, every form and mind is subject to it. So this is a common reality to all humanity and mankind, not only unique to you. So the only difference between the one who suffers and the one who doesn't suffer is what? It's wisdom, understand? No? It's understanding. The one who suffers doesn't understand. Worry about it. Perceive it with negativity. Labor it as a problem. And the thought constantly haunt him. Until sleep also cannot sleep. Eat also no appetite. Understand? No? In Hokkien they say, be jia be kun. That is not life, is it? This moment, if I want to be happy, I will be happy. But why am I not happy? It's because people don't understand. People go and worry about life. Why can't you just live? Live means what? At this moment, I'm peaceful. Understand? The problem hasn't happened. You go and worry about something that hasn't happened. Even if it happened, but why must you perceive it in negativity? Happen, let it happen. It's just like I told a lot of people, they come and tell me, Brother Teo, I got financial problem. I got this problem, career problem. There was a lady, worked for the bank for 10 old years. Then the bank threatened to sack her, take discipline action against her. She developed so much fear and panic. Then the financial problem one also said, sometimes they say, not due to their problem, somebody else's problem. Most of it is from family. Then they go and sign guarantor and all those things. Then they get themselves entangled. I said, your problem is nothing, so small compared to the real problem. People got terminal cancer. The doctor say you got 6 more months. I think one more critical. Yours is not life and death. Like the bang on, I told that girl. What is the worst case scenario? lose your job only. What is so bad about that? If you perceive your wholesomeness, it's a blessing in disguise. This bank make you miserable. And you are not happy working there. So why do you want to cling on to that job that make you miserable? It's just like a lot of ladies. When the husband or the boyfriend dump them or don't want them, you know what they do or not? They like panic. And they still wants to patch back the relationship. Until when they see no possibility, you know what happens? They develop the opposite, the hatred, the deep resentment. I say, why do you do that? By doing that, are you happy? Are you peaceful? They told me they are not happy, they are not peaceful. But you see, you know what their answer was. But that bastard cheated me, did all this thing to me, How can I let him go? I say, it's up to you. This is your choice. If you choose to behave this way, are you happy? Is your child happy? Your husband also miserable, you also miserable, your children also miserable. Then not only that, your parents also miserable, your loved one worry about you also miserable, your in-law also miserable. Why do you want to cause so much misery and suffering to yourself and others? Why can't you love yourself and make yourself happy and peaceful? Understand? Accept it as a reality, then adopt the understanding to resolve it. The three things I told you. Need to ask for forgiveness. Don't have to ask from the fellow. Ask for all those people, whomsoever from the distant past until now, whether knowingly or unknowingly, that this nature of mine has caused any karmic negativity or suffering. This nature sincerely would like to ask for forgiveness. And may my sincere request for forgiveness be accepted by all. Then may all these beings be well. You develop goodness, understand. Then you repent, not to repeat it, not to cause all this suffering. Because law of karma is you reap what you sow. Because in the past life you have done this to people. That's why this life, when you come, there is condition, it will hit you back. So when it hit you back, you have to accept that this is a reality, you understand not? Based on nature's law, law of karma. If I accept, I don't hate him anymore, you understand not? When I don't hate him, I don't suffer anymore, you understand not? I'm at peace. That's why when I forgive somebody, I actually free myself. When I forgive him, means I don't hate him, means I don't have misery. I don't have this anger, hatred, which is an evil root, you understand not? Make me evil. Then I become peaceful. Then I ask myself, what is the situation? What is the actual problem? Then when I reflect with a calm mind, I can get proper solution. Means I know how to act. I will not act negatively, wrongly, like last time. I will act with Noble Eightfold Path, following the teaching. Right view to accept the reality, then approach the situation with right speech, right action, and right thought. Means with all the wholesome state of mind. Then radiate love and metta. You need to ask for forgiveness. Ask for forgiveness. Say, I might have made a mistake. I'm very sorry for what I have caused to you. So if you apologize, things will be toned down, resolved easily. Then if you really are sincere about resolving all this amicably, people will appreciate. Then all these things can be resolved. Through what? Through understanding, through sincerity, through having good approach. Talk to people nicely. Need to apologize. Understand? You just want to resolve your problem. Then regarding financial problem is even easier, I told that lady and that person. I say, what is the worst case scenario? Let's say you owe the bank guarantee $500,000 or $1 million. What is the worst case scenario? Very good. Bankruptcy. You go to the court, you tell the court, I want to pay, but I got no money to pay. that I'm out of job. I don't have a stable income. And the court will not charge you, understand or not? Charge, C-H-A-R-G-E. Means charge a person. Not. You go and buy things, they charge you for the service. This one, they really charge you. But they cannot charge you because you are willing to pay. And you got no money to pay, it's not a crime. Understand or not? Worst case scenario, you owe people more than 30,000 now, the threshold, they can put you to bankruptcy. And you know how difficult to put people to bankruptcy, or not? Got to hire a lawyer. Got to put up the bankruptcy order and all those things. Got to advertise in the paper. They also spend money, understand or not? So most bankers, they are willing to talk. Yeah, I got one friend, Sam. He's an accountant, he know. The cousin sister landed herself with credit card problem and all. They owe the bank a few credit cards, over 100,000. So the cousin sister panic, cry, and came and see him. And he said, who asked you to go and juggle the credit card and all that? Well, she's a real estate agent, no? Real estate agent, you know, no constant income or no. But good timer, good commission. You know what he told my friend, Sam? He said, I saw the other agent and some of the clients. They make so much money from property. You know, I only get the commission. You know. So she also greedy. You know. She also go and buy property, you know, thinking that she can also make like these people. You know. Then the recession came. You know. Everything went down. Then commission also not stable. Reserve, use up already. Then use credit card to juggle until credit card all burst. Then lawyer letter come. Panic. So finally, my friend helped him to resolve it. He said, okay, you tell me all your credit card, how many, together we resolve it. So he went and talked to the banker. He said, okay, we got two choices. My sister, cousin sister, willing to go for bankruptcy. Then you get zero. Yeah. You can go and put him into bankruptcy. Not only you. This bank also got. That bank also got. Then he said, the other way, we talk. And at first they say, I waive all the interest. He said, no, not enough. Take haircut. At first he said, okay, 20%. No. Finally he negotiated down to 60% haircut. He said, you want, instead of bad debt, he become good debt. Waive all the interest, haircut 60%. Then he helped the cousin sister to pay the 40%. And the bank willingly accept. Understand? Nothing life and death. Why are you going to worry for nothing? Yeah? Yunjan? Huh? That's why nobody advises your colleague. Worst case scenario is only bankruptcy. Now all the new graduate very smart, no? PTT and also don't want to pay, no? You realize or not? And the government did not put them on bankruptcy, no? More than 30,000, no? PTN is all 40,000, 50,000, no? Why? Because they know their rights, understand or not? But with the new Pakatan, maybe they will pay. No, certain type of people, their thinking is different. Last time my Kedah State loan also same. I pay ahead, I just settle everything. Then I went there and settle. You know the clerk, the Malay clerk there, very nice. He talked to me. He said, Citiu, you orang Cina, semua bagus. Tada satu penentu yang tak bayar loan. You orang selalu suka mencepatkan bayaran. Supaya you, instead of 4-5 years to pay, I 1 year plus, I pay everything. You're only 9,000 loan. Understand? So what he told me was, he said, their people are very funny, you know. They think it's like we all in Hokkien, akong one, akong, msai wan, akong galoye, msai wan. So they have this type of mentality, you know. That's why they refuse to pay, and they know even they refuse to pay, they won't take action. That is the way that thing snowballed and escalated. Because if you really take action, I tell you, they will pay. So now they are trying to get them to agree to EPF. EPF is the easiest. But you cannot run in there. Everybody got EPF in there. So, through EPF, you deduct. It's either they sacrifice their saving or they go and pay. And like Pamasuri say, how can you don't pay? People help you to finish off your exam. No? We call it chow ka, bad leg. Why? Why bad leg? I also don't understand. Oh, almost 10:30 already. So now, with all this, I hope you all have a clearer picture of what karma is. Oh, exactly 10:30. Yeah. So, the application aspect is very important, the teaching. First Noble Truth Reality is a common reality. It's something that is common to humanity. That's why I call it a reality. Not only you suffer. Not only you have to confront. Everybody has to confront. And that is the teaching. And the Buddha never said life is suffering. No. He said the first Noble Truth talk about the Noble Truth of suffering. He said suffering is everywhere. Prevalence of suffering when you confront them without wisdom. Without the understanding of his teaching. That's why the third Noble Truth, he said, enlightenment in the here and now is possible. Suffering may not be. That's why he never said life is suffering. He said, you can train your mind, develop the meditation, cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. It will lead to the end of all suffering. You can have the happy life, the good life. And that is what the teaching is all about. Then why are you not happy? I always ask people this question. No? We hold the key to our own life destiny, right? To be happy or to be miserable, we can decide, right? It's very easy to decide to be happy, right? Then why are you not happy? Why are most people not happy? You think they don't know how to choose? Well, they don't understand this teaching. Like just now I showed you the analogy of the cup. You go and hold on to the cup, you know why or not? Why or not? Then you say, this is my problem. Understand? You hold on to the problem and you worry about it. So worrying about it and holding on to the problem is like you hold on to the cup. You get yourself burned and tormented by it. Even if you perceive it as negativity, with negativity and fear, what you should do is you should put it down so that you can attend to it. When it's not burning you and tormenting you, you have clarity of mind. Means you can accept that this is a reality. Okay? Let's say health problem, financial problem, career problem, relationship, whatever it is that fall under first Noble Truth Reality. If I accept, means what? I got no more problem. I don't go and worry anymore. I don't have fear, all the same. Then I resolve it. Resolve it through what? Understanding, apply Noble Eightfold Path, then make a decision and move on. Why you want to hold on to things, develop the hatred, the anger, the fear, the phobia, the worry and the anxiety, and get angry over nothing, and miserable over nothing? Well, you don't love yourself. You love yourself means you cannot allow yourself to be afflicted this way. It's just like you love your kid. What will you do? Your children. You go all out to protect them, isn't it? Provide for them, care for them, and love them, isn't it? True or not? So if you really love yourself, you should do the same to yourself, isn't it? Protect yourself from being hurt, isn't it? But who is hurting you? Through your own wrong thought. You use the thought wrongly to cut yourself, hurt yourself, harm yourself, and make yourself miserable. And this is stupidity. It means you don't love yourself. If you love yourself like your kid, you will protect them. Go all out. Care for them, love them. Have you ever really loved yourself? If you love yourself, you become so beautiful. Where there is love, There is no more fear, worry, anxiety, anger, sorrow, and lamentation. These are all born of ignorance, delusion, not knowing the teaching. That's why you choose the wrong one. You choose to be miserable and unhappy. Yeah. Not that you don't know how to choose, so, but you don't know this teaching. You keep on holding to that thing that is burning you and tormenting you without knowing that this is causing you suffering and misery. But you hold on to your problem. You keep on saying, this is my problem. I have to resolve it. Nothing wrong with that statement at all. But resolve it without holding it. It's much better than holding it and yet cannot resolve it. Isn't it? Where you hold and worry, how can you resolve? If you don't hold, it doesn't burn you, doesn't torment you, then you can resolve it, isn't it? Understand? Human beings probably, they hold and worry about it. That's why I say no amount of fear, worry, anxiety can solve your problem, can help you. Why don't you just accept it as a reality and move and tell yourself, I am determined to go out of this and move on. Because I love myself. I don't want to see myself in such state. Like the Buddha said, you got two choices. Worry about it and become miserable over it. Why do you choose that? And I can tell you, 90% of the human beings who are deluded choose the first option to make themselves miserable. Means they don't know this teaching. They don't love themselves. And they choose to be miserable without them knowing, you know, that this was their choice. You know what happened? They still blame people. That guy, my husband, did this to me. Otherwise, I would be very happy. Then someone gets sick that time, you know what I say? That stupid doctor never diagnosed, never advised me. I said, then my parents never tell me all this. Now too late already. Still want to blame. No? You better check karma. You are born of your karma, head to your karma condition and so forth. You are what you are because of your karma. Nobody make you like that. It's you yourself through your own karmic negativity that make you miserable. So all suffering comes from your own ignorant delusion through your own negativity or karma. If you have this understanding, you never suffer again. You become beautiful. Okay, we better end. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So next Tuesday, we have that discussion. We go around. Oh, no more already. Oh, that special puja. Okay. Then the following one. Oh, following one go on off already. Oh, not yet. 11. 11 only going off. Oh, yeah. Yun Chan is going off. Oh. 25th of August. I thought it's July. Yeah. So we still got one more Tuesday before our spiritual trip to China. Okay, let us share merit and transfer merits to all beings. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu loka sasana itta vata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu tayo imina punyang kamena Mame bala samagamo, satang samagamo hotu, yawa nivana patiya, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, you all can pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones. also there are some other food. So the durian, you should thank Sister Yun Chan and the husband, and also Auntie Sister Mimi. Then Queenie also brought something. Oh, there are a lot.